Helplessness to self-sufficiency, having served over 90,000 people with a success rate upwards of 62%. You can help the homeless with your support for Chapman Partnership. Details at 877-548-6369 or chapmanpartnership.org.
And it is today's Topical Currents, Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper here along with Bonnie Berman. Good afternoon, Bonnie.
Good afternoon.
This is sort of like our Friday since we don't do a Topical Currents on Friday.
That's right.
And we have food and dining ahead of us, too.
Correct.
Great chef with us.
Yes.
Well, we begin today with practicing therapist Jude Bijou and mainly focus on managing workplace anger. We'll take other issues as well. She's the author of Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life, and she joins us from Santa Barbara, California. Welcome to you, Jude Bijou.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So, referring to workplace anger, you say it can be dealt with immediately on the job as well as at home. How should one go about displacing that anger if you've had an upsetting session with the supervisor?
Well, it starts by recognizing what you're feeling in your body, because emotions really are emotion, energy in motion. So that if we figure, I'm starting to feel for anger, that hot feeling like I want to strike out, then I go, I've got some energy moving in my body, I got to get it out of me before I do something that I'm going to regret.
So we recognize the physical signs of anger, then how do we release or diffuse it?
Well, the best thing to do is to go, if you're in a meeting or wherever, go find someplace safe, whether it's in the bathroom, whether it's in your office, whether it's in the car, and find a way to move that energy out of the body. For anger, it's like a feeling like a little kid having a temper tantrum. If we just let them kick and scream and yell, they're going to move through it in a couple of minutes and fall asleep or get distracted. I'm not saying we should all have temper tantrums, but to go someplace safe and stomp around a little bit, or if you're like in the restroom, grab the hinge of the stall and just shake the daylights out of it. Move that energy physically out of the body, and you'll be ready to figure out what's next.
So that's the benefit of expressing our emotions physically, because it moves it out of our bodies. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, because the opposite of anger is really the emotion of love. And most of us would like to come from a more loving place. So if we take care of that anger, if we move that out physically, then we set ourselves up to come more from, now what do I really need to do? What does the best part of me want to do to handle this situation?
Why do most people stuff emotions and avoid dealing with them? I never do that.
Right.
Well, I think it goes back to very early messages that we got. We got from the culture, we got from the parents, we got from our peers, we got from the media. We really learned that it wasn't okay. We got those messages, don't cry if I'll give you something to cry about, or girls aren't pretty when they're angry. Or, don't be a scaredy cat. We got so many messages, and they're messy. Emotions are loud. This is their energy that we've got to find a way to move out of our body really constructively, but physically. And if we've got the parents who want to get us all in the car so that we can get to grandma's house, there's not time to deal with that emotion. So we don't think there's the time. And so the child acts out. We do something different instead, and that's where we get into trouble.
So we're speaking with Jude Bijou. She's written Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life. If you'd like to join in our conversation, talk about anger, the way you deal with it, perhaps, you can call us at 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-WLRN. Learn how to deal constructively with your anger. Or you can email radio@WLRN.org. That's radio@WLRN.org. www.thebetterhumanbeing.org. So Jude, you say we have only six emotions: sadness, fear, and anger, which reside on our left side of our mind, and joy, love, and peace, which reside on the right side of our mind. Could you explain that for us?
Mm-hmm. If we think that we only have six emotions and they're just energy in the body, we have sadness, which is when we feel really down, and the opposite, joy, we feel really up. We are that bubbly. With anger, the emotion of that anger is hot and strike out and push. That's that physiology. Where with the opposite emotion is love. And that we feel, instead of striking out, we want to bring everything into us, so we have that warm feeling. And then the last two emotions are fear, which is that agitation in the body, and the opposite of that is peace, where we're calm and alert but present.
Isn't anger usually a result of fear?
They all go together. It really depends. A lot of times, like when we have a calamity, the first thing we feel is that fear. Am I going to survive? What's going on? My survival feels threatened. That's fear. And then it can move to, wow, I'm really angry about what just happened, or I'm just really sad. Some people go to sadness, some people go to anger, but we go back and forth. We're fluid in that way. We have, I think of it as an emotional body that we have gotten pretty good at putting in the back seat, that we need to bring a little bit more forward and honor as part of ourself and deal with the energy in a constructive way.
So why don't we use your attitude reconstruction process for our listeners practically? Why don't we take one destructive attitude, say self-critical or self-loathing? How do we transform that into a positive emotional counterpart, or its emotional counterpart, positive emotional counterpart?
Well, there's two. I will talk about two ways really briefly. One is that when you're crying, because crying is wonderful, tears are nectar, do not allow yourself to cry about how terrible you are. That's what we usually do. So we think really bad thoughts. So I would say the first thing we do is allow ourselves to cry, but remember what we know when we're feeling really good. Instead of thinking, oh, nobody likes me and I just can't do anything right, what's the opposite? What's really true? I have potential. I like what I'm doing. I'm whole. I'm complete. So find thoughts that contradict the old thinking and think those while you allow yourself to cry. So the first thing is cry.
Okay.
You'll be less critical. Stop beating yourself up.
Okay, and from there?
Well, it's the second one. Use your thoughts. Like during the day, instead of thinking, oh, I didn't do that right. Oh, I didn't do that right. I didn't do that right. Think something like, life is for learning. We all make mistakes. Life is for learning. We all make mistakes. So you're really replacing, every time we first identify the old thinking that's not bringing us more joy, love, and peace. And every time we hear it in our head, we go, oh, no, that's old stuff. The truth is, life is for learning. We all make mistakes. Life is for learning. We all make mistakes.
How about traditional anger management sessions? Sometimes they're maybe enforced by employees, sort of like a punishment.
Mm-hmm. But see, personally, the key is what we're thinking, because we've got to move that energy out. So if there's groups, not that sit around and talk about it, but help people find a constructive way, whether we're going to roll up newspaper and hit a stump of a tree, or whether we're going to stomp around, or whether we're going to yell into a pillow, or jump up and down, or pull weeds like crazy. We've got to find a way to handle that energy. And if groups attend to that and offer people that tool, then it's great. But a lot of times, it's trying to think myself out of the anger. And then I think it's just not as effective as it could be, because the emotion is strong. When we feel that energy surging in our body, it's really hard to use, oh, no, don't do that. It's hard. It's energy we need to move at that moment first. And then we can start to think, because we're more back on the planet, because we're not ruled by that energy at that time.
You say that the truths are more effective than the affirmations for changing behavior. Many of us have learned about affirmations. What is the difference between truths and affirmations?
Well, an affirmation is, I wish. I wish I was, you know, I am thin and beautiful. That can be a little tough if that's not the truth. I see peace all around me. Like, those are nice thoughts, but they're not going to take you as far as having another different kind of thought, like, I'm doing the best I can, or I'm whole and complete, or my job is to take care of myself. My job is to take care of myself. That thoughts like that are going to be unequivocally true. Just like another truth is that people and things are the way they are, not the way I want them to be.
You talk about purging workplace anger at home. I assume that's not on the kids, the spouse, or the dog.
Exactly. It's setting up a safe place, whether it's the bathroom or the back bedroom or the garage or out in the backyard or someplace where every member of that family can go and move that anger out of their body. I recently dealt with some folks in the business that they would get so angry as the deadline came when the truck had to take the last order out that they put up a little corner where anybody could go and, you know, stomp for just a minute or two and then come back out and resume their work. That we need to just have it so that it becomes really a part of our responsibility to take care of our emotions so it doesn't leak out in blaming each other. That's what happens with anger. We put it out on other people. We tell other people about themselves and think that it should be our way. And that doesn't bring love. That just makes more and more anger.
We're speaking with Jude Bijou. She's a practicing therapist, and her latest book is Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life, on today's Topical Kearns Thursday edition. We need to take a short break. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM, and online at WLRN.org. Good afternoon. Monsignor Edward Pace High School hosts an open house Saturday, November 10th at 8:30 or 10:30 a.m., offering dual enrollment, AP courses, signature academies, fully digital curriculum with iPads, extracurricular and athletic programs. Details at 305-623-PACE, extension 342. We're funded by listeners like you and by Dale Carnegie, South Florida, committed to providing executive coaching and training solutions for busy professionals, focusing in the areas of sales, leadership, customer service, presentations, and communication skills. Details at southflorida.dalecarnegie.com.
Two-time Grammy nominee Seraphic Fire continues their best-selling season with Bach and Monteverdi, The Psalms of David. A critic's top five concert pick of 2012-2013 by the Miami Herald, this breathtaking collection of masterpieces by Bach, Monteverdi, and other greats is what Seraphic Fire does best. Performances November 14 through 18 in Dade, Broward, and Boca Raton. Tickets at 305-285-9060 or seraphicfire.org.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman here with Joseph Cooper. We're speaking with Jude Bijou. She's a practicing therapist, focuses on managing workplace anger. She's the author of Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life. Your website, Jude, is attitudereconstruction.com. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
I wanted to ask you to tell us about your background with meditation and Vedic philosophy and how that's influenced your teachings and your practice.
I've brought together elements from three forces, from three places. My father was a pioneer behavioral child psychologist, so I got some science that's just indigenous to me. Then I wasn't finding the keys to my own happiness through that, so I went to the East and I went to India and got involved in meditation and studied Vedic philosophy. And then as I was older and needed a career, I became a psychotherapist. And I've seen people for 30 years, individuals and couples, groups, and teaching communication. And those elements just started to merge together. And it's like, oh, the importance of emotions, that's really that. And the importance of some of the concepts of Eastern meditation to really honor yourself and be true to who you really are. So those all forces came together, and that's how Attitude Reconstruction was created. Started with a blueprint, which is that one-page element that people can download from the website. And then somebody said, oh, you can't just sell one piece of paper. So I spent the next 20 years getting clear and writing this book, Attitude Reconstruction, which is a handbook of explaining how the mind really works and how we can go from sadness and anger and fear to joy, love, and peace.
Let's take a call or two. First up, we have David in Pompano Beach. Hello, David.
Hi. I'm just calling because I heard a couple of things, and I'm curious about any statistical data to support your behavioral suggestions. For example, going someplace to just get it out, shake a bathroom stall, door, or hinge, or something. It contradicts what I've read from a pretty well-supported book called Anger, The Misunderstood Emotion by Carol Tavares. I'm curious about where you're getting your data and your statistical studies psychological studies to support your recommendations.
Uh-huh. Well, the difference really is when they have done virtually all the studies, they're not factoring in what a person is saying and thinking while they're moving that emotion out. Because if you keep going, oh, that darn son of a gun, and how could they? I could do that emoting forever and still not feel better. So the studies give that data as if it's not effective because of the way they're instructing people to move that energy. So that's part of it. And so far, there's really mostly experiential data. I can line up, hundreds of people who can tell you that in 5 minutes, we can let go of that energy that we've been holding on for days or months or years and be in a clearer place to figure out what do we really need to do. Because it's about action, it's about taking action, and it's about communicating in ways that will bring more connection.
Well, I would highly recommend, if you haven't read this, Anger, the Misunderstood Emotion. Believe me, I have no connection to this author or this book, but it does debunk some of those comments, and it would be worth it for you to at least take a look at the data that says that some of the recommendations aren't effective.
Good. I have looked at it before, and I'll do it again. Thank you.
Tell me, Jude Bijou, you speak of the inner electrical system in the book. Why are we both lovers and warmongers?
It's just our nature. They're just emotions. So we all were born with these six emotions. So it's natural to feel love, and it's natural to feel anger. And that's it. If we don't move that anger out of our body in constructive ways, that's how we create wars, whether it's in the family, it's with our spouse or with our children. We create wars or in our communications, in our work, in our countries. It's all because it all goes back to, I haven't done with that, and I've become a monger instead of a lover.
You say that there are five tools we need to successfully interact with the world: emotions, thoughts, intuition, speech, and actions. Some of us have find it very hard to access our intuitions. What is the key to accessing intuition?
The biggest key is to pause and take that minute to ask yourself the question. So, and pause, I say shiver to move some energy out of the body, but for people who aren't familiar, that sounds too strange. It's just take some deep breaths or do whatever, take a walk, do what calms you. And then you just ask yourself the question, what do I want to go here for this vacation or not? And we know, if we'll just pause and listen, we know. What happens is our mind comes in and starts, oh, well, I shouldn't. And that's if we just listen to that quietness and hold on to it, that's our intuition. And it's always, it takes us in the direction of what feels good, what creates, you know, more joy, love, and peace.
Jude Bijou, many here in South Florida, of course, are very experienced in hurricane recovery after being devastated by a storm. I wonder if you could touch on the victims of Hurricane Sandy in the Northeast. Is it eventually that desperation does turn to anger? And what's the best way to deal with it?
Well, it is, because for all of these natural, whether they're natural disasters or human-made disasters, we're all going to have them. They're part of being a human and being on the planet. So in each case, there's so many emotions, and for me, it's giving permission to deal with that, whether it's the hurricane or whether it's the fires or whether it's the earthquakes. We need to find that place to go and cry. We're not going to get over that with a cry or two. Our house is gone. Our past is just evaporated on all those levels except our memories. And there's so much sadness. We need to allow ourselves to cry about the loss and to really let our bodies shake with all that fear, so we keep out of the future and we keep making it worse for each other. And to keep the anger, it's natural to feel anger with any of these kind of disasters. And we just have to go and find that safe place, that steering wheel to go, not to yell and all that kind of thing and say mean things, unhelpful things, things that create anger, but something that owns that energy. Oh, and then you get back in line and take care of whatever you're doing from a different space.
I suppose you're referring to a heated discourse when you talk about communications violations. Run that by us.
Mm-hmm. What we have gotten a master of the anger energy is outward, and we take our energy, if we don't handle it physically and constructively, we take it out on what's our world, and that often goes out onto other people. So if you're frustrated, it can go out on your kids, it can go out on your boss, it can go out on the coworker. That's where that energy goes out. And what we do is, I say, we, you people, you're not on the planet, you didn't do what you're supposed to do, how could you do that? And we you them. And nobody likes to be there on the receiving end on that. When somebody tells us about ourselves, we don't. It's like, I'm not open to listening, unless they're saying something nice. You can you people all you want, as long as you're saying something positive. But it's those comments about the other people that are going to create bad communication. It's youing, whereas we need to come back and really talk about our own experience, talk about what's true for us.
Or going way back into the archives for some slight that irritated you and bringing that up to someone.
Exactly. That's another thing. So we make it much, so much bigger by bringing in our unfinished business.
Let's take another quick call. We've got to Robert in Plantation. Robert, I'm a little short on time, so please be brief.
I shall be brief. I just want to propose a theory, different from your guest, that all anger stems from fear. Usually a fear of loss of something. The secret to anger is to look inside yourself, find what you fear, and usually it's something actually petty, or if you're having a fight with your spouse or your children or something, look what, if they're angry, look at what they fear. Discover the fear, relieve the fear, the anger will dissipate. No need for a moving body energy, face your fear. It's that simple, that quick, that effective.
Okay, thanks for your call.
I'll listen now.
Well, I totally agree with that. If you face the fear, I say it's sometimes hard to see what I'm looking for. It's in that murky kind of vagueness. If I shiver a little bit, move that energy, my mind can start to function, and I can go, oh, it is about fear, and this is the issue. That person's feeling really insecure now. And then that could... Yes.
Go, I'm sorry. Complete your thought, please.
Well, if you move that energy, then you can go from the fear, just like you said, the anger just dissolves.
Well, certainly,
any emotion.
I certainly want to thank you. We've been speaking with practicing therapist Jude Bijou. And again, the title of her book is Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life. And we'll have a link to that book on the Topical Currents Facebook page.
And your website again, June?
www.attitudereconstruction.com.
Food and Dining is next.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back to Topical Currents here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station. Thanks for joining us. We'd like to thank our corporate underwriters, the Florida National University, Chapman Partnership, and Manchester Business School. These corporate underwriters help bring you the programs you enjoy throughout the year. Please join WLRN in thanking them for their continued support. We're funded by listeners like you and by Gulfstream Park Art Festival at the Village of Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach. You can enjoy fine art, food, and music at the Gulfstream Park Art Festival on Saturday, November 10th and Sunday the 11th from 10 to 5. Details at gulfstreamparkartfestival.com. The New World Symphony, America's Orchestral Academy, presents a Wallcast concert with music of Mendelssohn and Prokofiev, Saturday, November 10th at 7:30 p.m., free at Miami Beach Soundscape. Details at nws.edu.
Team Footworks invites all walkers and runners to the FedEx Waterford 5K on Friday, November 9th. The FedEx Waterford 5K is fun for all. You can rent a tent, order catering, or play in the kid zone, then party with DJ Irie at the post-race celebration. Proceeds benefit the Miami Children's Hospital. Details at waterford5k.com to register or 305-666-RACE for information.
Like Topical Currents Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Join the conversation, post a comment, share links, and see what other listeners are saying at facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And we do return. It is today's Topical Currents Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. And we're here with chef, author, and syndicated columnist, Linda Gassenheimer, our longtime friend. Linda will concentrate on real Florida cuisine today from a true Sunshine State native son. His family's long, long ties on Miami Beach. He's also an acclaimed chef, of course, a restaurant owner, and a returning Topical Currents guest.
Yes, he is.
How about that?
One of our favorite guests here. So, Joe and Bonnie. Hello, Bonnie.
Nice. Hello, Linda. Hello.
Florida cookery. So, what is really Florida cuisine? As you mentioned, our guest is Chris Wessel, and he tells me there's more to it than just stone crabs and key lime pie.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, but there's more. And he's opening a new restaurant, and he's calling it Florida Cookery. So welcome, Chris Wessel.
Thank you, Linda. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's our pleasure, since you filled the studio.
Indeed.
With wonderful food, great food. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any special memories or recipes of old Florida cooking? Or maybe just have some questions for Chris Wessel. Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And email, that's radio@WLRN.org, and Bonnie will take that.
Okay. And also with us, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. You can read Fred's column in today's Miami Herald, and he's joining us by Skype. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I thought I'd talk about Bordeaux-style wine made right here in America.
Sounds good to me. Okay, so let's go to Chris. And Chris, congratulations, first of all, on this new restaurant.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Florida Cookery. Now, when we first talked about your new venture, you said you wanted to reintroduce us to the real Florida cookery. So what did you mean, and why did you want to do that?
Well, because I have so many family members and family ties here in Miami Beach, I've seen the evolution of food and product over the years and through old family recipes and from just being here in the industry over the past 20 years. And I see a multitude of cultures and flavor and product that I think needs to be reintroduced.
Well, wonderful. Let's talk about your family. But you call yourself a Florida cracker, but you spent a lot of years in Louisiana. So tell us what this connection with Florida is.
Well, actually, I spent 10 of my 40 years in New Orleans growing up, going to high school, and the other 30 years I've been here in Florida. My grandparents settled Miami Beach in 1926. My grandmother had 10 children in 12 years. She had twins 1 year, so she was...
So that was all right for her? Okay, good.
And they all grew up on Miami Beach in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and still today. And along with them, the cultures of South America and the Caribbean and the Northeast and the American South have settled Miami and Miami Beach, and Florida cookery will show those cultures.
Well, wonderful. Well, actually, you brought here in the studio mm-hmm. something from your grandmother, in addition to the food from your backyard, really. There's a press there. What is that?
That's my grandmother's 1929 press. They got here in 1926, and my Uncle Joe, who's still alive, the oldest of the 10, gave that to me when I opened Red Light. And I used it at the bar at Red Light for 4.5 years.
That thing's a treasure.
It's wonderful. Now you're talking about Red Light, and that was your restaurant on Biscayne, was it?
Yes. Correct. Yeah, right. Up on the Upper East Side on Biscayne.
Right on the canal, right. Little River Canal.
Beautiful little river that my Uncle Joe used to rope swing into in the 1940s and 50s as a teenager.
Well, but it's closed now. What happened?
It's closed. Yeah. Well, the owners of the motel are actually have had the motel listed for sale, and I was in my option year of a 5-year lease, and the increased market value, I just couldn't do that, babysit Red Light and also headline at Florida Cookery.
Now, where is Florida Cookery? Tell us.
Florida Cookery is in the old Royal Palm Hotel. Yeah, the James Group from the Northeast, the James Soho, the James Chicago have taken it over, really done a beautiful job with restoring it. In a modern sense of efficiency, but in a Art Deco preserve sense as well. The original terrazzo is there, the original front desk is there, and of course the original view of the Atlantic Ocean.
It's 15th Street.
15th Street and Collins Avenue.
So you're right in the thick of things.
On the sand.
Mm-hmm. So you're bringing, this is a piece of old Florida being renovated, and you're bringing Florida cookery. So now just tell us, what is your Florida cookery?
Well, Florida cookery was one of the cookbooks my grandmother had in her kitchen in the 1940s and 50s, along with the old Key West cookbook and Caribbean cookery. And Florida cookery was actually a burnt orange classic pamphlet-style cookbook that housewives and of all different cultures used to figure out what to do with guava or breadfruit or mangoes, because everyone from Miami Beach came from somewhere else.
So, and you brought some of this fruit here. Mm-hmm. Talk about guavas. Bonnie, you and I tasted this guava. She's so busy eating, she can't talk. She's eating all the Florida food.
She can't
food.
Get the seeds out of her. Yeah, the mini guava seeds, right?
No, that guava was so sweet and delicious. It tasted a little like grapefruit.
Yeah, my buddy Nick from Farm Fresh Produce brought it, and the skin is brown. It's small, like a plum. That's a real Florida guava. That's a real Caribbean guava. Mm. Some of these Thai guavas you see in the grocery store that are look like these big green grapefruits aren't real guava.
This is so good.
And yeah. What he's brought is so good. Well, let's go. We're going to talk about what you're eating in a minute, but also over there, there's a great big round fruit. It's like a little tiny watermelon, it looks like. What is it?
That is breadfruit, and that grows on the trees here in South Florida in the neighborhoods of Miami Shores, in the Redlands, in Homestead. If you roast the breadfruit whole, the flesh of the fruit tastes like white bread. Uh-huh. With a little bit of sweetness. What we're doing with it is we actually do tostones out of it, like you would do with plantains, but it's got a great crisp and a great sweetness.
They tasted like French fries. They were almost addicted.
Bonnie and I were just gobbling them up. So tostones, just quickly, for some people who might not know what they are.
Tostones are basically twice fried, usually green plantains, you know, eaten in the Latin American cultures everywhere. And the Caribbeans fry breadfruit and put it into salads, and that's where I got the idea.
Chris, when I was doing a documentary in the Keys about the 1935 hurricane about 10 years ago, I talked to a survivor, a longtime conch, and he said that turtle was a real mainstay there. Sunday afternoon, instead of a beef roast, it was turtle.
Well, if you go to the Florida Cookery website, you'll see a picture of my Uncle Jim sitting on top of a sea turtle in his backyard in 1942. And if you open Florida Cookery and the 1949 Key West cookbook, you'll find four recipes for sea turtle. Hmm. Anything from sea turtle soup to sea turtle steaks. It's great, in my opinion. Not the endangered species part, right, but in the fact that the product back then was so plentiful that it wasn't unpolitically correct to eat it or use it.
But also,
well, now for years, the Sid and Roxy's Green Turtle Inn was down in the Keys. Is that still there? Does anybody know?
Yes. I just did my book on the Florida Keys.
Right.
Another edition of it. And yeah, it's there, but it's not the same as what it was in the 1940s or whatever.
Are they serving turtle soup?
Well, no, I don't think they are serving turtle soup anymore. But you know what happened? If you were in the Keys, you were totally cut off. There were no bridges at all.
Right.
And so you had to eat the protein was either the fish or the turtle, or if you had chickens in your backyard. And that's what you had. I mean, that's why they have sweetened condensed milk was so much a part of the Keys, because if you didn't have a cow, you didn't have milk.
That's right.
And you had to have canned milk.
Yeah.
So those were all of the things there. Now, let's talk about what Bonnie's scarfing down here.
Linda.
I actually brought a royal hearts of palm salad. Oh. What we do is we take the whole hearts of palm, we shave it carpaccio style on the plate. We then toss microgreens and sunflower sprouts that I got today from my buddy at Seriously Local. And we shave Brazil nuts on top of it.
Oh, now, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yes.
But this is not canned hearts of palm. This is fresh, but they're nice and supple.
Yeah, it's wonderful. If you get the very heart of the palm and shave it fresh and put any type of acid on it, in this case, I have a homemade orange vinegar that's 2 weeks old and has the bite of the orange, but in another 2 weeks will be even better. That tenderizes the hearts of palm and makes
Let me tell people about this vinegar. He was showing it to Bonnie, and I've just passed out from the wonderful
The aroma
of it. He takes the orange rinds and you marinate them in salt, macerate them in salt,
right.
Wash them off, rinse the salt off, and then you put it in the vinegar.
That's right.
And you leave it.
And you age it. That's right. And you know, speaking of old conchs, there was a condiment on all the old seafood shacks from Miami to the Keys from, say, the 30s to the 70s, and it was called Old Sour. And all it was key lime juice and salt that they would put in a bottle and cork it like wine. And the longer it sat, the sweeter it got. These old crackers, these old fishermen, were aging key lime juice. There's a recipe for Old Sour in Florida Cookery.
That's your grandmother's book.
My grandmother's.
You put that on fish?
You put it on conch fritters. You put it on turtle steak. You put it on. The fact that there was a recipe in the Florida Cookery cookbook in the 40s means they were really using it. In the 1980s, the Miami Herald came out with an article on Old Sour.
And that's what it was.
And you're going to be making it.
I have several bottles aging at on Collins Island.
How long do you age it?
Well, you can age it up to 6 months, and the longer it gets past a month, the better, the sweeter.
Oh my goodness!
And what about the dressing on the salad, other than the vinegar with the?
That I use just a safflower oil, shallots, orange segments, and fresh orange juice that I put in my 1929
juicer. It is the wonderful fresh
juicer.
Greens, okay. The oranges in it, these microgreens.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go for a break now. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking with Chef Chris Wessel about Florida Cookery, his new restaurant. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more.
Right back to Topical Currents here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR News Station. We're funded by listeners like you and by Life Policy Payout Program. With the program, you or someone you know can dispose of an unwanted or unneeded life insurance policy for a lump sum payment. Qualifications and more details at lifepolicypayout.com. There are creative writing and publishing workshops at Miami Book Fair International in downtown Miami, November 14th through the 16th. Registration is open now, but space is limited. Details and registration at the center at mdc.org and at 305-237-3023.
Five-time Grammy Award winner Diana Krall launches the Glad Rag Doll Tour in Miami. On April 2nd, the Arch Center will be the first U.S. venue to feature music from Diana Krall's new critically acclaimed studio album, Glad Rag Doll, an exhilarating and adventurous exploration of new sounds, new instrumentation, and new musicians. Diana Krall, April 2nd at the Adrian Arch Center. Information at archcenter.org.
That's where the source of my tears.
Red Barn Theater, 319 Duval Street, presents the world premiere of the suspense murder mystery, Person of Interest, written and directed by Bob Bowersox, November 7th through the 24th. You'll witness a riveting conflict between two powerful characters and then two unexpected plot twists to keep you on the edge of your seat. Tickets available at redbarntheater.com or the box office, 305-296-9911. Brought to you in part by the Monroe County Tourist Development Council.
And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Chef Chris Wessel. His new restaurant is Florida Cookery. It's at the James Royal Palm Hotel on Collins Avenue and 15th Street. It'll be opening this week?
Yes? Correct.
Correct. Okay. He's been bringing us back to the original Florida Cookery, and he's just so passionate about it. It's wonderful to hear him talk about it. And I'd like to give you a reminder that the Miami Book Fair International opens this weekend. There are several cookbook authors and cooking demonstrations this year. For an example, one of my favorites will be somebody's going to be making these scrumptious homemade candies. And they're from their book, Little Bit Sweets Candy Cookbook. That's going to be Sunday, November 18th at 3 p.m. And you can find out more about what's happening at the miamibookfair.com. They'll give you author and cooking demonstration information. More information, food and wine tasting, flavors of Fort Lauderdale. It's a culinary event. It's going to be at Los Elvis Marina. It's this Saturday night. And here's something for everybody who would like to know. There are going to be five women chefs cooking there on Saturday night in Los Olas.
And I'll be there.
Okay. I want everybody to know that Chris is adorable and he's 6'100".
Yes.
How tall are you, Chris?
6'5".
Right. He looks even taller. Okay. And on Sunday, there's going to be a grand tasting. More than 70 restaurants are going to take place. For more information, go to flavorsfortlauderdale.com. And now, dinner in minutes time. This place is just full of food today. And today's is Autumn Burger Sliders. And Joe, yes, they're made with beef.
Good. None of that turkey business.
Nope. Sorry for others, but sweet potatoes and red bell peppers. So this is really made easy because I let the microwave help us. Put mushrooms, onions, and together in a microwave bowl, and I microwave them for a little while. Then I mixed some maple syrup with some Dijon mustard and put that over the onions and the mushrooms. Set that aside, and then I put some of that mixture into the hamburger meat, the beef patties. I made little patties about 3 inches in diameter. Cook them for about 3 minutes aside, put them on the little mini slider rolls, and top them with the onion and mushrooms.
All right.
Very good. Sweet, a little sweet, little autumn flavor with the mushrooms.
Nice fresh buns.
There you go.
Little squares.
Little ones. And then sweet potatoes and red pepper, really colorful dish. I just peeled the sweet potatoes, cut them in cubes, cut the red pepper into cubes, and in the microwave again. And if you'd like another burger recipe, I hesitated because, Joe, this one's made with tuna. Texas tuna burgers with jalapeno potato salad.
That sounds fabulous.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Fred, my friend. Anyway, that's at my website, dinnerinminutes.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at L. Gassenheimer, or on Facebook. And by the way, the Autumn Burgers is in today's Miami Herald.
Yes, it may.
Fred, are we drinking today?
Well, absolutely. I'd like to talk about a actually very delicious but kind of confusing style of red wine that's made in America, and it's called Meritage. Now, everybody knows that red Bordeaux wines from France are considered among the best in the world. So American wineries from all the way from California to West Virginia want to copy the recipe they use in Bordeaux. And that is that by French law, a Bordeaux wine must be made from two or more of the following grapes: Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, and Malbec. So American wineries are making expensive red wines under the same recipe, and there's a really nice one called Magnificat by Franciscan Winery in Napa, and it's not cheap. It's $50 a bottle. And it's a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, which is gives it its firm structure and tannin, Merlot for softness and fruitiness, Petit Verdot for its powerful aromas, and Malbec for its inky black color. Wow. So each grape has something to add.
Is that available in locally?
Any major wine shop would have this.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Magnificat. Sounds good.
Yeah. It's a wonderful wine. The problem is that most people have never heard of the category called Meritage. The word looks like it's French, and it looks as if it should be now pronounced Meritage, as the French would. But the term is actually an American term, and it's a combination of merit and heritage, so it's pronounced Meritage.
I didn't know that. I always called it Meritage.
See, you learn something here every day.
Never know, Fred.
Anyway, the next time you see one on a restaurant wine list, order it. It'll be great, and you'll impress. Now, Linda, you can impress the waiter by pronouncing it correctly. Assuming, of course, that the waiter knows how to pronounce it.
Well, that could be an assumption there. So let's go back to Chris Wessel. You've been so involved in the Miami with your love of Florida cookery and all, but you're also very, very involved with the Florida schools and the school lunch program. So tell us what you've been doing with that, because it's wonderful what you've been doing.
Well, yeah, I was telling you earlier that every aspect of food, and to use a restaurant term, going out to kids in the school system is being consulted upon and getting input from local chefs, and has been for the past 3 years. We launched the first salad bar in the country last year with Michelle Obama. We have automat dispensers dispensing salads and parfaits to kids who get
yogurt parfaits and not
who get credit for the school lunch program and thus federal money. So we're really, and each of the chefs involved adopt schools and integrate themselves with teaching and training cafeteria managers so that our kids, my kids who both go to public schools, benefit.
It's fantastic what you've done, and I know that they've through grants and all, those machines are in every single high school.
Yeah,
and it's yourself and Michelle Bernstein and
Michael Schwartz, and Doug Rodriguez, uh-huh. and several other, Lorena Garcia now, and just it just keeps growing every year. We 2 years ago we wanted to get four of those units into the schools. Now, like you said, they're almost in every one.
And is this program trickling down to the middle schools and elementary?
Yeah, it's trickling down to my daughter's elementary. We launched the citywide initiative on free breakfast and breakfast to go in September, and I'm now a new hero to my daughter.
She wants you to be there all the time.
Of course.
Well, you're getting kids to eat breakfast. I think it's
That's right.
Terrific that you chefs, as busy as you are, and boy, chefs work 24/7, that you spend the time to do that. That's really terrific. Well, it's been a really, really wonderful, tasty week.
Indeed. This has been a fun program.
Fun program. Chef Chris Wessel, thank you so much. And for your great food you brought.
Thank you.
And for your great stories about old Miami.
His restaurant is Florida Cookery. It's at the James Royal Palm Hotel. It's at 15th Street, Collins Avenue.
I want to give that a try.
Yeah, that's going to be great. Bonnie, great to be with you.
Thank you. Same to you. And thank you for bringing everything.
And Joseph Cooper, you all ate well today.
Hey, sliders are one of the best salads I've ever had.
Okay. And, well, next week is going to be, oh, I forgot, Fred.
Yes.
Fred, hello, are you still there?
Hello, I'm still here.
Hi, Fred.
Wake up and go to sleep, Fred.
Fred, send us some of that wine you've been talking about, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. Well, next week we'll be talking with TV chef Joanne Weir. She's going to give us some great tips about Thanksgiving and our menus there. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that wraps up today's program. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical direction from Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and MP3 downloads at our new website. That's WLRN.org. Also, author and book links, staff photos, discussions, and more at the Topical Currents Facebook page. See photos of Linda Gassenheimer and Bonnie Berman. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we return with a man who spent 18 years on the Arkansas death row before his release. Somehow he stayed sane and has written Life After Death. Damien Eccles was also married on death row. And to the calendar, on this day in 1887, 125 years ago, the death of gambler, gunfighter, and OK Corral shootout participant, Doc Holliday. He was also a dentist and died in bed with his boots off. Also, on this day in 1927, 85 years ago, the birth of singer Patti Page, actually Clara Ann Fowler, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Many of her recordings were produced by Mitch Miller. How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. The Tennessee Waltz. I'm giving myself an earworm. And one more while we fondly remember the good neighbor ideals. On this day in 1932, 80 years ago, Franklin Delano Roosevelt is elected president in a landslide over incumbent Herbert Hoover. We leave with a thought from FDR, quote, "The test of our progress is not whether we add more to the abundance of those who have much. It is whether we provide enough for those who have little." This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today, along with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from where else but NPR News. This is 91.3.